You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
This episode of the Kinda Funny Games cast is brought to you by Dollar Shave Club. There's no reason to use a cheap disposable razor or pay a ridiculously high price for some gimmicky, unnecessary nonsense. Make the smarter choice and join Dollar Shave Club, the key to getting a fantastic, high-quality shave at an affordable price. And right now, they're giving away a one-month trial of any of their razors for just $1. And get it, it's the Dollar Shave Club. With free shipping. So here's the deal. I've been looking good. I've been, you know, cleaning up. You know I like my beard. But you got to clean up the little upper side, the lower side, the lower east side. It's all that stuff. There's no long-term commitments, no hidden fees, and you can cancel whenever you want. You can get your $1 trial at dollarshaveclub.com/kinda. That's dollarshaveclub.com/kinda. Get your shave on. That's not their actual tagline. I just feel like it should be. What's up, guys? Welcome to the first ever episode 112 of the Kinda Funny Games cast. As always, I'm Tim Geddes, joined by one half of the coolest dudes in video games, Greg Miller.
Hey, how are you?
And joining us for his expert insight, the producer slash seducer,
yeah,
Nick Scarfino.
Also known as the champ. What do you suppose this thing is? Did it come out of me?
That looks like the top of... That looks like the top of a shoelace, but I think it is one of the tops off that we just barbecued. I think it might be one of the tops.
Okay, one of the utensils.
Did you get it out of the kitchen?
It may have gotten stuck to my glass when I put it on the kitchen.
That makes sense. Yeah, that makes perfect sense.
Makes a lot of sense.
You make a joke about it. I want to make very clear, of course, Colin Moriarty is left kind of funny. There's videos up, there's posts up, there's all sorts of information about this. I assume at this point you would know about that. Nick isn't here just to be like all goony and stupid like Nick gets to be sometimes.
I thought you meant the one half of the coolest dudes in video games thing was a joke. No. He's still a half. He's still out there.
Oh, no. Colin's still super the other half of the... Yeah, no. I was already moving on from that.
Yeah, oh, there's no joke.
Nick is here because for purpose. Yes. We brought Nick for purpose this week.
Oh, I am?
Great. Yeah, because the first topic of the day is going to be Greg Miller's Mass Effect Andromeda review in progress.
Indeed. And so you are a Mass Effect fan. You can ask me intelligent questions.
Yes.
Yeah, because I don't play Mass Effect.
Exactly.
So, first off, as a fan.
No, not yet. No. Because there's a whole...
Hit the table?
There's a whole rigmarole. No, there's not even a rigmarole for that. There's a rigmarole of if you, ladies and gentlemen, are watching this on patreon.com/kindoffunnygames, thank you for your support and getting early access to this episode. The problem is the Mass Effect review embargo lifts Monday at 12:01 a.m. So we can't put this up on Friday. Mm-hmm. So we're going to do the rigmarole, everything you got to do. And then when we get ready for the Mass Effect review in progress, we got to clip that out and you can watch it YouTube on Monday.
Yeah. So get hyped about all that. And if you didn't know, this is the Kinda Funny Games cast where each and every week we get together and talk about video games, all the things we love about them and all the, you know, criticisms and critiques that we have about the industry and all that good stuff. You can get it early on patreon.com/kindoffunnygames, or you can get it late on youtube.com/kindoffunnygames. But if you go on Patreon, you get a whole bunch of perks, you get a whole bunch of goodies, just like my boy Salem Ghanem Al Ghanem did, producer of this here fine
producer
show.
Producer slash producer.
The Kinda Funny Games cast. And also, all these people, these fine folk supporting this, making this show happen. Thank you.
Thank you for all your support.
Very much.
We need it more than ever.
For everything. How you guys doing?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. I'm a little tired.
Yeah.
We had a little barbecue today.
We did.
On the Kinda Funny Morning Show.
And there nothing gets you ready to go on camera like a ton of ribs and beer.
Yeah.
That's really a great idea.
I'm feeling tired.
Yeah.
A little tie.
Sure. You're all tuckered out.
This is my been a long fifth week. Coffee of the day.
Fifth? That can't be correct. Is that real? Your fifth coffee of the day?
It's my fourth coffee.
I was going to say, well, even that's not healthy.
It's not.
Yeah. I didn't have any because I knew I was going to have the beer.
Mm.
You guys decided, the day drinking, by the way, gets harder as you get older. Mm. I just want you to know that. It hits you quicker, and it makes you want to go to nap time a lot faster.
Yeah.
So you should just know this. Just understand this as you, especially when you're drinking those IPAs, that just hits you right in the gut.
It's that nap time.
It is.
Nap time for Timmy.
We need to have, if we had one more spare room in this studio, we would have a little hammock. We go in there and just sleep. Like I would make it like soundproofed and stuff.
Or what I always wanted was, I always wanted, remember Different Strokes?
Oh, yeah.
The show Different Strokes.
Yeah. What are you talking about?
What you talking about?
What are you
talking about?
What
are you talking about?
Excuse me, Willis. What are you talking about?
I hate to interrupt you, Willis, but what would you be talking about? I was like their bunk beds that weren't on top of each other. They did like that. You know, they made like a T. We should do that.
Yeah. I had bunk beds like that.
Really? Oh, Kevin's trying to chime in.
He's been there for like 45 minutes.
If you guys want hammocks, we can definitely have hammocks outside.
Sure.
It's just like that.
How many outside hammocks might not be a great idea considering today is the first day it hasn't rained in 45 days.
But we get some down comforters that are...
waterproof?
Yeah, waterproof and sleeping bags. Boom.
A boom.
Done.
All right.
Speaking of boom.
Yeah.
Greg, bring it.
All right. So here's where we got to cut you off, Patreon people. We'll be back with topic number two. Mass Effect Andromeda... Review in progress.
Review in progress.
We did this before with Zelda, and we have now been milking Zelda for topic after topic. I think it's the next topic after
and
this
we will
one.
Continue in the show with Nick's impressions of Zelda.
Exactly. The Mass Effect thing is the exact same boat as Zelda, where we got it. We were at PAX East. It rolled in during PAX East, so then I started it Monday night, but it's been a hell of a week, and so I've only been going. I've put in, for you at home wondering, I've put in three solid nights of Mass Effect. So for being conservative, we'll say 6 hours. I would venture probably more towards eight, something like that.
I'll give you a seven. A solid
You'll give me
seven.
A solid seven? Thank you very much. Too much water, seven. The thing about Mass Effect Andromeda is this. It was night three that hooked me. And that, I have a feeling, the way I, you know, because I don't rehearse, but I wanted to get my thought. I'm in the shower today. Showering Porty down here. Showering me up here. I'm in the shower
Does
with my
really
dog.
Shower with you?
No, I wish that'd be awesome.
That'd be amazing.
I'm in there trying to collect my thoughts. And the more I felt like I talked in my head about Mass Effect Andromeda, it sounded negative. And it's one of those that I don't think it is. I'm enjoying this game. I just think the bar for Mass Effect is so high. And that's the problem. Mm. We're recording this on Thursday.
Mm-hmm. March 16th.
Thank you very much. This is the day that Early Access has gone live. So you're seeing all of these different posts on Instagram and Twitter and YouTube right now of people making fun of the lack of facial animations, the weird crab walk you'll get sometimes, blah, 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 blah. All of that is true. I was surprised by that. Of course, I went and did that preview event and did a preview here on the Gamescast. And I left that preview event super stoked. And I still am. Very. Mm-hmm. I mean, especially after last night. I think part of the reason night one didn't like... knock it out of the park for me was that I was again playing what I already played. That's always so hard to come into. All right, cool. Like this game was cool when I played it the first time, but I know what's about to happen with, you know, Scott Ryder. I know who this person is. I know what's going to happen. Da, da, da. I know what the big turning points and
Scott Ryder
movie moments are.
Is that his name?
It's Scott or Sarah Ryder. Ryder. Yeah.
Scott or Sarah. Okay. Cool.
Good characters. Uh-huh. Very fond of these characters.
Now,
so
has
far.
Anyone made the ride or die joke yet with Scott Ryder?
I'm sure someone on the internet has, but you can do it right now if you want.
Scott Ryder Dyer.
You're really blowing it up. I said I brought you in for your expertise, and that's what you're.
I'm going to bring the expertise in a second, but you're still getting the shenanigans with it.
So I think that might have not soured night one, but was like, okay, I'm waiting to get through more of this. But then it was also the fact of playing on PlayStation 4 is a drastically different difference than I played on that PC at that event, where, again, it doesn't look bad. I'm not playing this game like, you know what I mean? But there is things of like, this doesn't seem like Mass Effect. This doesn't seem like the kind of bullshit that you'd expect to see in Mass Effect the faces that aren't super emotive. And like today, I thought I was crazy because I was thinking about it. I was just like, I feel like Mass Effect 1, 2, and 3 had better facial animations that sucked me in more, right? And I was thinking that, and I'm like, but maybe I'm doing that thing where whenever we think of a game that's come before it, we're like, you know, look back and you, oh, Mario 64 looks amazing. So great or whatever. And you play, you're like, oh shit, this did not hold up. And then there was somebody on... a YouTube video that I put in, I think the Polygon article today, where they were putting together everybody's like, hey, this isn't looking great, where a guy went back and compared it to one. And I was like, okay, this looks on par with like how one's human faces looked.
Right.
And what Polygon said, I mean, to give an out to all the criticism I'm giving, what Polygon said in their article, Patricia Hernandez today, said in her thing, I fully agree with, of... on night one, when I already knew it, and I'm like, whatever, and I'm watching, I'm like, oof, like, yeah, Scott's face does not look that great. You know what I mean? The people he's talking to don't look that great. Now, again, not like it's low res, but just like not emotive. You know what I mean? The way that I'm like, well, that's interesting.
It's the eyes and the mouth.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. When
they don't match up where it's like the eyes are emoting one thing and the mouth's doing another. Yeah. It's like, this is kind of weird.
But what Patricia said in an article, I think, rings 100% true and did last night of when you're in there and you're having these great conversations and you're really interested in what these people are saying, you forgive the fact that at some point you're like, well, why does he look like that? That doesn't, you know what I mean? Like, that doesn't, like, there is this great dynamic that I got a glimpse of during the preview event when they jumped me way ahead and I got to see the team around like the round table of, you know, they're like at the Tempest planning the next mission. Playing through the game this time around on my own, getting to that first time where there's a meeting or whatever and they all kind of just walk off and he's like, meeting dismissed. Like, it's funny, and seeing how the characters play and how different they are, I'm already really into them and what their characters are and where that's going. And for me, that's what a Mass Effect game is. You know what I mean? What I was talking about when Mass Effect 1, and I give Mass Effect 1 shit all the time, is just the fact that I'm not the military guy. I don't like space on, like, that's always such a stupid thing to say. Colin gave me so much shit for it. I don't like space in like the way that, like, oh, you have to sell me on space. And Mass Effect 1 and the whole Spectre storyline didn't work for me, and I got out. Mass Effect 2, I thought, Suicide Mission, all right, I'm hooked in. Mass Effect 3, I thought was like the sequel to Mass Effect 2, I'm fine. Mm-hmm. Mass Effect Andromeda, I think the story is awesome, fascinating, and from the get-go, super interesting, right? Mm-hmm. Of, cool, you guys have left during the events of Mass Effect 2, which doesn't, they don't say that, but that's what, you know, they told me at the event, and you put it together if you really want to. You know, it's 600 years later, you've arrived in Andromeda, you are waking up on your giant ship, you know, that has, you know, I think it's 200,000, 20,000 other humans on it. It must be 200,000. You have all the other humans on there or whatever, you're waking up, and now, you know, you're the Pathfinder. You need to go out and you need to find us a new home on this, in this new galaxy. And that's awesome. And it's like, the gravitas of that, right? Of like the speeches before you go out, like that, you know, your father who's the Pathfinder is giving you or stuff and all this, and then the speeches totally it is. And in that moment, I'm like, yeah, okay, I get what's happening. I understand why we're doing this. I understand what we're going out there. And it works on such a great level of getting planet side. And, you know, like I talked about in the preview, but then even on later on going to new planets, you know, when they give me the control of the Tempest and I go wherever I want, and it's just like Mass Effect 2, right? You know, galaxy map, zoom in on the little clusters, which planet do you want to go to, mine for stuff, as I know fans of. But
I love it.
Getting to a new planet and being like, all right, cool, there's a new planet I haven't seen. I immediately bring up the Omni tool and scan it and get the points so that I can go back and put those into research so I can then develop those weapons or that armor or whatever the hell I want it to be, that mod. Like, it's very interesting, because of course this game is going to be compared to Horizon and Zelda, right? And all these other open world RPG, you know, however you want to classify Zelda, but you know what I mean, open world RPG-ish and all these different things. And the fact that all three of these games, I think the thing I've talked about in the reviews that I don't think I usually ever talk about is discovery and exploration, and that being what this is, and how each one of these games does it so differently. Whereas Horizon was, I got to expand this entire map and see what's going on over here. Cool. And then there's some new machines, but they're all in the same vein. Zelda is, I have no fucking idea what's over that cliff. I'm going to go check it out. And okay, cool. And then the part of the game is the walking and the gliding, whatever comes to me and fights me on the way there. And then this game is, cool, I'm literally exploring, trying to save humanity, let alone like all the other races that are attached, because there's the other arcs coming in that have the Krogan on it and have, you know, Mort's people on it. And so you get into this thing of it all makes sense in such a great base level. And there are, like, you know, I was saying it hooked me last night, where I think the intro is awesome. I think when playing the intro both on that PC and a PlayStation 4, I was like, oh, this looks a little bit weirder, because the PlayStation 4 thing, again, it's like, it looks, the facial animations look even weaker. And then it's this weird thing of like movement looks really weird. I haven't had the crab walk we've seen on the internet, but I have seen what, like last night I was running and I was looking over and another character's talking to me across the way and she was like in strobe. Where it's like, bah, da, ja, you know what I mean? And I'm like, you're not using a biotic. You're just walking really awkwardly, and that's not how that should be. But whatever, you know what I mean?
My question about the looks and the animations of it all. So I feel like a lot of times, especially with the internet nowadays, it's a race to the headline of what's the funniest thing we can say about 100%. This game. And so it's like once one website, and it usually is Kotaku, has the, oh man, the animations are kind of janky.
We have all these GIFs,
then it's all these GIFs left and right on every site of just, oh yeah, that's happening to me too. Do you think that kind of framed you, or even going
into
it?
No, and that was interesting. That's why, honestly, it was one of those really refreshing moments of when we review games, and I shouldn't even say that, when we used to review games at IGN, it was very much, cool, I'm sequestered for the most part. Maybe I'll talk to somebody else in the office who's playing it, but I'm the guy who's going to have this opinion. And the last few days, it's been that thing of like, does this look bad or is it me? Am I projecting what I think it should look like? Because I don't remember Mass Effect 3 and Mass Effect 2 looking like this. And that's okay, maybe it is. And then to get up today and look at my phone and have like all these, I'm like, oh, okay, cool. I'm not crazy. Because that's always the fear, is that I was going to come here and be like, I don't think this looks that great. And everybody else is like, it's perfect. And you're like, oh, fuck.
Well, I mean, but even looks aside, I feel like, it hasn't been a negative reception, but so far the previews that have been coming out today seem a little bit down on the game.
Sure.
And I think that's because they expect so much from
100%.
A new Mass Effect.
Yeah.
And I think, my question to you is, we've had Resident Evil 7.
Sure.
We've had Horizon. We've had Zelda. Like, so far, the games that people have been looking forward to
Persona
have delivered.
Previews have been delivering everything.
Persona in Japan has been killing it. Like, these 40 out of 40 reviews. Great. Where do you think Mass Effect's going to lie?
I think Mass Effect's going to underperform or underrate. You know what I mean? Again, we're recording this before. I haven't talked to no reviewers. The only person I've talked to about this game is Britt Bromrocker, right? Who's just the biggest Mass Effect fan that there is. And she's playing it for her YouTube channel and stuff like that. And I think this game is going to get. The easiest way to sell it is, for me, in a nutshell to put it, right, is that it's Mass Effect. If you like Mass Effect, you're going to like this game. It just doesn't feel all the time like Mass Effect, if that makes sense. Because even like going up to crates and getting loot in the game, which, you know, I did so many hundreds of thousands of times in Mass Effect 1, 2, and 3.
Right.
Like, it just doesn't feel satisfying. And the way the information is presented on screen feels, I hate to say this, right? Because I know how many people worked really hard on it. It feels like a lower budget. Yeah, and it's not, ooh. I'm sure it's not, you know what I mean? And like, but like when you start compiling it of like, oh, this is a weird, I'm getting things out of a crate and this is what the inventory screen looks like. And this is weird how these faces and look. And now again, what I'm saying though, to what I'm, you know, is that I can vaguely remember what inventory and getting things out of crates in Mass Effect 1.
Well, the trilogy with one was that everyone hated the inventory wheel, right? Like when you had to mount weapons or powers or anything like that. Everyone hated it.
Oh,
right?
Yeah. I bailed on Mass Effect 1.
The elevators and the
oh, elevators land, to hide the loads. And yeah. Stuff, and that, yeah. And that's the big thing about it, right? Yeah. And like for the nomads in this game, I love the nomad. It's one of those. I saw somebody say today in one of the articles that it was like wonky. I don't think it's wonky. I think it controls the way you'd expect it to. It drives like the Batmobile Tumbler, not the Batmobile tank we all hate. Like it was like cool. Like you're struggling to get up a hill. You drop it into six wheel mode or whatever it is and go up there and you take off and beat the shit out of everything. It's great. But it's the same thing of like when I'm talking about like Mass Effect, the AAA RPG, right? Like I'm gunning the nomad at enemies and I hit them and there isn't the satisfying like physics of them shooting off or them. It's like I hit them and then they don't even react sometimes and they back them over and then they die and it's just like, but this is Mass Effect. Like that, you know what I mean? Like that shouldn't be a thing. And I had a weird bug last night where I was driving the nomad and I'm just and it's like going and then the sound kept going but the nomad froze. And like the dust behind it was frozen too. And I was like, oh fuck, this is a hard crash. But I could still hear it when I was gunning or reversing or whatever. It was just like just frozen. The screen was frozen, but I wasn't moving, but it was still getting all the audio cues. And so like I tried to pause, I'm gonna pause, and I jumped out of the PlayStation screen, I came back in, and then it went. It's just like, huh. And there's logic problems with it I found where it's like, all right, cool. There was one of, you know, like any other game, right? Like, okay, cool, we need to get into this place. All right, great. I'm moving to that place. I'm clearing out, you know, it has my little objectives up here. Kill all the, you know, the bad guys. I kill all the bad guys, and then it still says up there, kill all the bad guys. And it's like,
kill
them all. There's no bad guys here. You know what I mean? I run around trying to get them to spawn, couldn't do it, and I was like, all right, and killed myself and came back and then killed them. And then it got to go.
Guys.
Dun, dun, dun. No! It's like, then you blow your brains out. Yeah, yeah. And so there's been things like that where the game just does, it's glitching, you know, on an aspect like that. Ooh, yeah, or like bad. Enemies, you know, like just appear behind me. I'm like, what the fuck? All right, cool.
I mean, so it's interesting that you're saying this because, you know, last month we were talking about Horizon and we were having similar issues with it in the conversations with people. Where they had that same vacant look, or it felt glitchy in the conversations because it was just such a big game and there were so many dialogue options and whatever. Mass Effect, known for its massive scope and a lot of conversation options, all that type of stuff. At the end of the day, you're saying you're enjoying the story.
Yeah.
It has a lot of glitches and stuff. Is it fun?
Yeah, 100%. And that's the thing. Now, here's what I want to say, though, is I think this is an interesting point. And sure, I'm a PlayStation fanboy, whatever. The way we talked about Horizon, right, where the woman's eyes rolled and she did that thing or whatever, and we're like, oh man, that sucks, but that's just open world, blah, 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 right? I feel like that was the, here's where the line of acceptance is, and you're a little bit above it or a little bit over it. Right. Whereas I feel like Mass Effect, what I've seen, is below it. And that's why I think reviews are going to hammer it. Because, of course, this isn't the same BioWare team that made Mass Effect Trilogy, right? There's changes. Everybody knows that Casey's not there, da-da-da-da. Like, they're already up. They're already into the Arkham Origins area, right? Of like, we know it's not really your thing, so blah, 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 blah. So now for them to come in and have it be less than, they're going to get hammered for that. And that is going to be, now we're like making predictions, which is cool that we get to do that.
I know.
But on review day on Monday, when they all pop, I think a lot of people are going to say it's unpolished but fun.
So Nick.
Yeah.
You are the Mass Effect guy, quotes, of our group.
Also, I should point out, I'm sorry, real quick. It'll be polished but not fun. And again, 6, maybe 7, 8 hours in. Yeah. Maybe as I go on, it gets even better and more polished and all this different stuff. I'm talking about first blush here.
Are you excited about playing the game? And does this conversation change that at all?
No, not at all. But I think that my big question was, does it feel like a Mass Effect game? And that's like, looking at it, it walks the walk and talks the talk. But the question is, once I get my hands on it, is it going to be as immersive as that world can be? And now, granted, I never played 3. I only played 2. So only got up to 2, I should say. Didn't play any of 1.
Best one.
Just started with 2, jumped right into it, kind of read some of the story, and just, everyone, that was when everyone was playing 2, and I was like, I don't want to go back and play 20 hours of 1 and then have to jump into 2. But 2 is...
20 hours, just be talking to the fucking creatures on the, goddamn that game.
That's fair. 2, I felt was a masterpiece, though. I mean, it was really a very immersive experience, and it kind of is heartbreaking to me to hear that you're having some of these technical issues take you out of it.
But that's the thing, is that the game is so good that I think that it does overcome its technical hurdles. I'm just talking about from a strictly, I'm a critic, I'm reviewing it, I have to put a score to it. I think they're going to knock it for all these different things.
Yeah. Well, I mean, again, I don't remember specifically, and this is just my bias when it comes to to in-game cinematic stuff, but I've never thought that anyone's done it specifically well. And I don't remember Mass Effect 2 being any better. I remember the eyes specifically being super dead, and the hair was the thing that always bothered me. So I don't know if that's something that they're just, that's not their priority.
I mean, yeah, exactly.
You know? You got to play the Naughty Dog games, Nick.
No, no, I'm sure the Uncharted games are great.
But again, that's
Uncharted 4.
You understand. He understands, too, of what a different experience that is. Of a linear world, you get to control everything. And I get that, and that's the thing about it where the thing is, it feels like Mass Effect, right? But then they do so many things that they try to change it up that I don't know if they feel like Mass Effect anymore. Like, there is no, like, for cover, you just walk up and take cover on stuff, which sounds fine, but sometimes it's confusing and weird, and he's not taking how I want it to. I feel the locomotion and the animations for movement when they aren't doing, like, the strobe thing I'm talking about, right, which is few and far between in my playthrough. They look better than they did before, but then this time around, they've added in, if you remember that E3 demo where they showed all the platforming, where you're, like, using your rocket jump pack to jump onto these different pillars and move around, they do that, and that's not done super well.
That was the PS4 Pro
The one where you boost up there on different things and stuff, and you have sometimes, and this is, it's gotten better, but on night one it was very much of me trying to jump up to things and overshooting it or undershooting it and not getting where I wanted, or him pulling himself off and then falling off and doing stuff like that. Last night I went through, I think, the section from the PlayStation 4 Pro conference, and if not that, then a vault very similar to it, and I did not have it. I thought for sure this is the test. Didn't die. So I'm used to it now. The jetpack makes more sense to me. But it is that thing of easing you into it. What it excels at, I think, is I think Ryder's a way better character than Shepard was.
More dimensions.
Yeah, exactly. I thought Shepard was a super... I loved my femme Shep, don't get me wrong, but I never connected with her being this, like, I'm this military person and da-da-da-da-da. And so for her to go drink with somebody or fuck somebody, it was always like... This is weird because you're not giving that softer side. Right. Whereas with Ryder, I'm playing as the male Ryder because he looks like Nathan Drake, sounds like Nathan Drake.
Right.
And the way they've done conversations this time and gotten away from Paragon and Renegade and done all that, like being able to pick in the moment what it is, there are differences to tone to the Ryder I'm building to the way he interacts with everybody, which I really enjoy. And then like, you know, the mission that got me last night was, you know, I'm going around this planet. You go to this planet. We need to turn on the atmospheric thing to do all this different stuff. But then once we had done that, we're still on the planet. And then I got to look at the map and see all my side missions. And it started talking about the viability I was bringing back to that planet by knocking off these things, because all these planets were trying to make for human life, inhabitable for human life and stuff like that. And so getting to then go, oh, now I see it, and go do other side missions that I'm opening up, whatever, a new tech wing or whatever the hell it is, and that's taking out the viability, great. And then there was another one of like, all right, cool, go to this place where, you know, the original colonists had come, but they all got killed, we don't know what happened to them. You go there, and it was that thing of like, enemies, oh my god, blah blah blah, and it was like, all right, cool. And I was like, where are they? And you walked out and there they were, and like they were there, they seemed like people were talking too soon, you know what I mean, like they triggered at a weird spot. And so then I walk out and then there's this giant fucking monster they're with, right? And so we kill all the other guys, or for most of them, and then this guy's chasing me around and shooting at his weak point and trying to get around him, getting over here and then shooting the other guy. And I was like, while this is happening, I'm like, this is an awesome moment. This is where they're winning me over. That I was already interested in what's happening to the colonists, what's happening on this planet, how do I make it better? And now this is happening. Now there's this cool, unforeseen circumstance. And so I stayed on the planet, clearing up all the side missions I could. And there's one great one that's, I'm not going to spoil for you, but it's like this guy, you not the raft is what I want to call it, but where the Tempest docks to the thing where everybody's staying in, right? I forget the name of it right now, but it's where everybody's supposed to be. And you get there and it's not how it was supposed to be, but you suddenly start helping it out, right? They have their first murderer there, their first murder, where this guy, that everyone's like, he clearly killed this guy. The guy says he didn't. The wife hits you up and she's like, oh, Pathfinder, can you help me? And so like, I took the mission, of course, talked to the guy. I'm like, yeah, I'll look into it later. And then it turned out it was on that planet. And so then to go around and piece together that thing, it was like, oh, okay, cool, cool, cool. And then when you inevitably get to the end of the quest where I go back in and I want to report to Tan, who's the guy who's like in charge at the moment of the whole structure or whatever. I'm talking to him, voiced by a friend of the show, Kumail. I'm talking to him and eventually he's like, all right, cool. Well, this is a tough decision. Like, which one do you want to pick? And like, there's that decisive, like, here you go, right? And I literally put the controller and I was like, fuck. This is a moral conundrum. This is a moral conundrum of how do I deal with it? And I was like, fuck yes, this is Mass Effect. This is what it's all about. You know what I mean? And like, is that guy, or whatever I choose here, whether I choose to, you know, do whatever with this guy, is that going to haunt me down the line in another game, in this game, or will I never see it again? Like, that's fun. But I did sit there and I was like, fuck, what is the thing here? And that was the deal of, you know, getting to that moment, getting to do a whole bunch of shit off the Tempest, and then coming back to the Tempest and doing the, let's walk through and talk to every one of my crewmates and walk through and talk to them and have the moments with them and flirt with the ones I wanted to flirt with, or just have a beer, ask more about this loved one they mentioned, right? Like, I was like, yeah, okay, this is Mass Effect. This is still Mass Effect. And yeah, like, I don't, sure, is should the face animate more? Yeah, that'd be great. Does it ruin the game for me? Fuck no. You know what I mean? Like, I don't care about that. The combat, even though I wish I could have, like, stick to the wall, you know, like, cover and, like, more natural jumping and stuff like that, I love the idea of the way I've been scanning things to get the research points. You know, I made this fucking badass assault rifle last night. And I also, you know, I forget what level I am right now in the game. I want to say 8 or 9, but I had already had enough points to completely max out my assault rifle tree, because there's so much shit to do, of course. Right. You no longer have to stick to one archetype. You can go put your powers in.
So, like, when you, so obviously, when Mass Effect 2 starts, you get to pick whether
you want to be a soldier, biotic, all that jazz. Yeah, yeah.
Do you not need to do that in this? Is you just
can,
one skill.
The whole thing with Pathfinder is you can switch. Which you are. Okay. And so then you have access to everything. You can put it all in wherever you want to go with
it. And then how does the Paragon or Renegade?
It's gone. They got rid of that. Yeah, totally. So the idea now is like you get to make your choices and do your thing as you go. So every conversation you have, you can interact differently with people and you can change the way you feel about people, right? Because I think Tan's a great example of that. Like, he's a little bitch when you first meet him or whatever. Clearly. And then later on, he still is, but he's like, but he's kind of being smarmy and we're all on the same page. But then somebody else comes in and confronts him about some stuff. And I'm like, well, they're making a great point. Like, I'm being fluid in the situation. I don't know if that actually is going to affect me or hurt me or if it's just all superficial stuff. Mm. But it's cool. Like, it is good. And that's the thing where it's this weird, I hate saying it because it's one of the cliches Craig Harris always told us never to write at IGN. But it's a mixed bag of, like, I think when people talk about it, they're going to talk about this bug and that thing and this stupid thing. But I think that's selling it short for all it does right. And again, the hope would be that when IGN, GameSpot, whoever reviews this, they've put in the 60 hours. And so they have even better eyes for it. Whereas I'm just here like, you know, I loved the preview event, but then playing through it again, I got to see some of the wires, I think, more, especially when I'm on the PlayStation 4. And now, you know what I mean? Like, the long and short of it is, I'm fucking pumped to go home and play more of it tonight. I'm not going to Beauty and the Beast because, you know, I got things to play. I'd rather be playing that. And so I'd rather go do that. And then, like, even though I'm excited for Zelda and Edmonton, I am going to miss Mass Effect, and I do want to get back and see what that story is going to be. You know what I mean? Like, the way it starts, this isn't a real spoiler, don't worry. You know, they're Scott and Sarah Ryder, they're twins. Whoever you pick to be, whether if you're Scott or you're Sarah, then the other twin, like, something goes wrong with them coming out of cryo freeze. So it's one
Did
of those...
Did they become the fly?
No, not yet. I'm hoping. Oh, my God. This is a... It's a spoiler in the lightest sense, not a story spoiler at all, right?
Right.
I'm going through, I get to my my Pathfinder's quarters, not captain's, Pathfinder quarters, and I go through my email, right? And one of the emails in there is like, hey, Pathfinder, just a heads up, we want to test like what, you know, Andromeda is going to do to monkeys in space or whatever. So we have, if you could come get this creature and put it on your on the Tempest, right? The rules for it are pretty simple. Don't feed it at after 11:59 or after what 24:59 yeah. or whatever. Don't let it get near any moisture and keep it away from lights. And I was like, that's really funny. And then it added to my quest. Go get this thing. And I'm like, fuck yeah. I'm going to go get my space monkey or whatever. Oh, so I go over there.
You got a space gremlin?
I get the damn thing and I put it in there. Mogwai at this point.
Space Mogwai.
And then it was like, all right, go check it out on the Tempest. I'm like, fuck yeah. And I walk over and there's this like thing. It doesn't look like a Mogwai, but it's just sitting there. And I'm like, oh man, it's out of its cage. That's weird. And I'm like, oh, I can't wait to see where this goes. It's gonna be like tribbles all over this fucking place.
Put it back in the cage?
No, it's just chilling out there. It's just,
you're a terrible captain.
It's totally being normal. I'm the Pathfinder. There's a difference.
It's fair enough.
I guess. I don't know.
You're still in charge of the fucking gremlins.
His whole rise to Pathfinder, man, it's an interesting. Well, all right. But it's great. It's a great story.
But I mean, is that more compelling to play than the Spectre? Like, is it,
I think so.
Because of the Spectre, they always felt like there was this, and I don't know what the overarching story is, but with the Spectre, they always felt like you were like this last hope. There was this, you were in, you know, these crazy odds, you're not going to live, you know. Mm-hmm. And I guess the other question I have for you is like, is there still.
Well, hold on, let me answer that question. Sure. So the answer, I think, is yes. And I think that they're different odds, right? Where Spectre was like, I'm out there in the front lines, da da. You, all right, cool. You're the Pathfinder, which gives you a special whole thing to do on. But you are the one now that makes the calls for humanity. We need to find a world for us to live on. Okay. So your team is going out there, investigating these planets, seeing if they're viable, setting up outposts, and then bouncing off to the next one to figure out if you can do it.
Are there consequences for the actions as far as some of the characters? Have you encountered that yet? Do you have a feeling that like, if you make the wrong choices, some of these people aren't going to live to the end of the.
Oh, sure. I haven't had that. I mean, this point, I'm just, you know, building my crew or whatever, but there are loyalty missions and all that. Jazz, okay. So you figure it'll be the same way. I would imagine that two ends, right? That there's going to be a big mission and I have to sign people the right roles. Otherwise, yeah, they're going to die or they won't even go with me. Yeah. What was your next question?
That was the pressure. There's just a lot of pressure.
Yeah.
That's why it was very stressful for me because, you know, I have fear of missing out.
Yeah.
So I don't like making the wrong choice and I get decision paralysis very quickly.
Sure. Well, I mean, that's the thing is I don't. And I think video game choices are usually pretty black and white, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I think the last choice I remember from a video game that's standing out was in Horizon when there's a little bit of spoilers for Horizon. I was trying to get the trophy for, you know, everybody who's going to be with you at the end. And there's that one guy who's like, oh man, cool. And like, you run over after doing all these missions, the bandit camps. And he's like, all right, cool. And you think he makes it sound like, you know, he wants to hook up or something. You run over and he's like, all right, cool. Now let's fight to the death. And you're like, didn't see it coming that way. And he's like, you can either fight me or not fight me. I'm like, well, not fight you. I want the trophy. And he's like, oh, you broke my heart because you won't fight me to the death. I'm like, all right. But that was like in 2 seconds. I'm like, I'm not going to fight this fucker.
Yeah, no,
you know what I mean? Like, I want the goddamn trophy. So like for this to be the one of like, fuck. Like, what do I want to do here? That's what makes me excited to go play more and go do more and have those things of what's going to happen to these people.
And you will play more.
I'll keep checking in.
Every day this week.
Oh, good point.
Right there on twitch.tv/kindoffunnygames. Every Monday at 9 a.m.
No, every day. Monday through Friday. Sorry. 9 a.m. I'm doing, yeah, Kevin and I are going to play Mass Effect where he sits over there and I just have a controller. And
yes. So starting today as you're watching this whole week, Greg will be doing that. So go check that out.
Yeah,
Pacific time.
So, to wrap it up the best I can. Not because we're in a great spot, right? Because... is it out Tuesday or is it out? It's out a week from Tuesday, correct?
Yeah, week from then.
Yeah. Okay, cool. So, like, there's still, you can get everybody's reviews, and I'll be able to obviously feed you more information as we go off of these Twitch streams, let alone me just playing and tweeting about it. Because, yeah, like, there's a lot of great here. But that's the problem of if this was a new IP and something totally different, nobody would be, you wouldn't have such a fucking standard to get to.
It's a high bar.
But it's Mass Effect. And that's the thing was where I think they are going to take it on the chin from a lot of reviewers. And when I say take it on chin, I mean, I'm not saying fucking 5.5. I'm saying like, you know, eights. You know, and everybody's going to be like, well, this isn't the matter. This wouldn't have happened if Casey Hudson was still around. That's not fair and all these different things, but I'm super into it. I can't wait to play more. I think the story is really interesting. I think the characters are really interesting. I'm excited. I'm still picking who do I want my girlfriend to be? Mm-hmm. What do I want to do here? You know, there's some interesting stuff. Yeah.
And can you have sex with more than one person?
Theoretically, remember, I'm assuming
you're a Pathfinder, so you got to find your way around. Whew.
It plays by the old Mass Effect. I think somebody did put it out in some article eventually that you could, have sex with more than one person in this
Good.
Game. But I'm telling you right now, I like Suvi.
Suvi?
Suvi.
You got your eye on Suvi?
Yeah.
Okay.
She's got a cute little accent. She's up there on the bridge.
Okay.
I don't know if I can. She has the heart when I want to talk to her, so I have been dropping the heart conversations in there. But it's still so top level at this moment.
Yeah.
I like what's happening with her.
I believe in you.
I do like
I will say that it's completely and totally unprofessional for a captain to be seducing members.
But I'm a pathfinder. It's a different thing.
I don't know about that, though. I still feel like you hold a certain level of authority over these people.
Sure.
They might feel obligated to have sex with you. I just...
gets messy.
It does get messy. I agree with that.
Second topic of the day.
Yeah.
Zelda. Breath of the Wild.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're still going to talk about it.
People want
what?
That. Like,
we're still playing it. People are loving it. You guys are still playing it. There's so much in this
game.
Have
you beat it this yet?
I have not beat it yet. Let's do the update here.
Okay.
I have not beat it. I am at Hyrule Castle on my way to the final boss.
Okay.
So it is going down soon.
Okay.
Where are you at, Greg?
I am 33 shrines in. 2, 4, 6, 8 hearts. Nearly 2 full stamina meters. And I have 5 little things to pay the goddess. What do they call them? Triforce gems? I don't even know.
Orbs.
Yeah, what do they call them? I got 17 seeds. Still have no fucking idea what to do with these things.
The Korok seeds.
Haven't run into anybody asking me about those. In 2,200 rupees.
Okay, cool.
I've beaten the elephant.
Beaten the elephant. One divine beast down.
Yeah.
Okay. Nick?
Yes.
What about you?
I don't know. I think I'm 4 shrines in, and I'm probably only all told about 3 to 4 hours into the game. I played it on the way back from PAX East on the plane. It's super fun. I was very surprised because normally when I hear people talk about Nintendo games, I just always have to take it with a grain of salt because I feel like everyone that loves Nintendo gives it an extra like 20% love, you know? And so with this one, I'm like, no, everyone's not fucking around. This game is legitimately really, really good.
I'm so happy you tried it, and I'm so happy you like it.
Yeah.
Because my fear when you were like, oh, yeah, I'm going to take the Office Switch, and I'm going to jump in and play it. My concern was that, I mean, I don't get me wrong, I love it. I love Breath of the Wild. But Breath of the Wild is so like, fuck off and do it. Go and do it. Figure it out. I thought that might be frustrating.
It was frustrating at first. And the controls were incredibly frustrating. I'm still toying around with the idea of moving my jump button because I just can't stand the fact that it's one of the main controls for the paraglider. And that extra second just kills me every time I jump off of anything to get over to it. But it's the same experience I've had with every Zelda game I've played prior to that, which is you get to it and you have to just kind of take a breath. And like understand that they're almost reteaching you how to play games when it comes to this stuff. Like I always talk about my analog to Zelda was always the last one I played, which I think was Spirit Tracks, but before that was the Phantom Hourglass, which was on the DS. And I hated the stylus controls to it. Hated it. Played 30 seconds of the game, I'm like, this is rubbish, this is trash. But then because all of my friends around were like, dude, you gotta give that another shot. Like just like throw out all your misconceptions about what a game's supposed to be. Throw out all the concepts of like this, like how the control mechanism is supposed to work, and just go in with an open mind. Finally, did I'm like, this is genius. This is what this whole platform's for. Like the stylus. This is why don't more people do this? I don't understand why all games don't control like this. And that's similar to kind of my experience with Zelda so far, which is that I've gone in with an open mind, thinking, oh god, I'm gonna have to run around and like hunt for my own food and like cook my own steak and like this is all just gonna be a bunch of shit. Like you mentioned Mass Effect emails. I'm like, if there's one thing that I really fucking wish they'd stop putting in games, it's having to read emails. Because I read fucking 40 emails a day at work and I'm like, the last thing I want to do is have to comb through some other person's email. It gives me anxiety. I don't like it at all. It's like another job. But with this, they somehow managed to take all these mundane tasks, like climbing rocks, swimming through things, like just shit that like you're like, I don't know.
That's what pioneers did, not me.
Well, they took all these tasks and they took the mundane aspect out of it and gave you more of a sense of adventure and spirit with it. So it almost feels like you're not even playing a game. You're just kind of roaming around this world, seeing what's around the next corner. And I like that. Like it does a good job of moving the story along just enough for me to be like, like, you know, I forget where I was. I was trying to get to this chest, but I don't have enough stamina. But there's just a chest, and at some point in the second area that you go into, it's like floating out in the middle of a
Well, keep in mind,
a pond.
The second area you go into is the final area. You start off with the Great Plateau.
Right.
You get off that. That's right. Like the tutorial area.
Right.
After that, it's just the giant
It's just the
world.
Area. Yeah. So, yeah. So I mean, there's like, you know, there's all, there's, I forget what it was. I climbed up to the second tower to unlock it, to unlock the map of the area. And as I'm looking around, I look down, I'm like, there's another cool little camp that I don't even know what that looks like, right? And I want to go down and I want to, yeah, so it did what it needed to do in that I'm still thinking about it. I'm still wanting to get back to it. When I had to put my Switch away to get off the plane, I was sad, and I didn't like that. And like, it has a lot of great moments already, and I'm only there 3 hours into the game. You know, like I was running around and all of a sudden the fucking rock monster from Galaxy Quest attacked me. And I was like, what? where did this thing come from? And I tried, you saw me, I tried for a good 30 minutes to beat this thing. And finally, he just grabs me by the shoulder and he's like, no,
yeah,
you don't have what it takes to beat this thing.
You have
point.
A tree branch, get
yeah.
away from
it. And I'm like, run. Yeah, okay, I'll go. I honestly thought I was going to hate. One of my other big pet peeves is when you your weapons break in games. I can't stand that. It was one of the reasons why I didn't play Fallout, because I was like, oh, I have a cool rifle. And it's like, this is a rusty rifle. It's got one. And then it blew up in my hand. I'm like, fuck this. I'm done with this game.
Yeah.
Like, I don't want to have to rebuild everything. It's similar to why I stay away from games like Far Cry or Horizon. I'm just like, I don't need to fucking take the shrub and put the other shrub together to make the elixir that's going to heal me one, like a quarter of a heart point. But for some reason, I just enjoy it in this game. And I think that, I mean, I assume the game's going to get harder and harder and I can already see what's going. But your criticism of it, I think, was one of the things I think is strongest, which is that I love that it doesn't hold your hand.
Yeah.
Because it makes you want to get out there and explore more and figure it out. Granted, I climbed that fucking mountain up to the third shrine like 15 times before I realized you could fast travel to it. They tell you that. That's my fault for not paying attention.
Sure, of course.
But also, I just found myself doing these things over and over again. So I'm like, I probably burned a good 2 hours where a little hint would have been like,
and see, that,
nice.
That was the thing I was telling Tim about when we went to PAX East, right? First, and I've said this on a few different things, but like having, you know, I've never had a 6-hour flight go faster where it was playing. Okay, I got up to go to the bathroom and the battery's about to die, so I plug it in. Oh, I was, oh shit, we have 3 hours left in this flight. And then play, oh, we're landing.
Yeah.
And like that was great, but when we landed and I came off, I was like so dejected. And I was just like, I feel like I made no progress. I'm like, I beat the elephant,
right.
I beat the divine beast, but I thought for sure I was gonna knock out like 5 more shrines, 10 more shrines, do all this stuff, and I found like one, and then I got involved in this, and there was a thing of like where I had to ask you, I'm like, what am I missing? Because I've been running around this room for 20 minutes trying to figure out how to fucking open this door. Like, what? Why can't I get this water wheel to spin? And you're like, oh well, you can do this. You're just not thinking the right way. And that's the thing of like when the game is so open. And you can do so many things and do them in any different permutation that there were, I was like, oh, I can't open this door yet, but clearly I'll do that way later. And it was totally an easy thing that I was like, oh,
yeah,
fuck,
I had the same issue in the third shrine, or depending on how you do the shrines, I guess it was the third shrine. Actually, it was probably the second shrine for most people, where you have to move the rock. And I was like, I don't understand how to move this rock.
Stasis.
I don't know why. Like I hit it with stasis and I'm like, nothing's happening to it.
Yeah.
And I missed, I think some level on my subconscious remembered that there was a tip at some point that said, if you hit things while in stasis, all the power builds up. So I finally figured it out, but it took me about an hour. Like I explored that whole thing, almost beat it, and then went and did the shrine up in the ice level in the plateau. First did that and was like, okay, I figured that out. But even that, like figuring out how to get up to the damn thing, and you're like, I don't understand. Like the heat meter is just one thing that it tells you one time. And you're like, that's not something that I would have really paid attention to.
Well, that's the brilliance of this game is, everything that you've done on the Great Plateau, that is everything you need to know for the rest of the game.
Yeah, it's a tutorial.
So
I
it's like,
that.
But as you go through that, it's like, it's different than other games where it's like, all right, you said earlier, it's like, oh, I'm sure like it gets harder as you go or whatever. The game really doesn't get harder as you go. It kind
enemies
of
have more hit points and
yeah,
stuff like
and
that.
Things like that. But I mean, at the same time, like that just holds you back. It's not like the game gets harder as you play through, because if you go to one section before another, then the enemies have lower hit points. Or like, okay, this area has more electricity shit going on.
Sure,
this
sure.
area has more ice shit going on in terms of the enemies that you're facing. But really, you can kind of tackle it however you want. And all you need to know is how to use stasis, how to use magnesis or whatever the fuck it's
right.
called, your bombs.
The water, and, the bombs.
Yeah, the water thing. It's like those tools will help you do anything in the game. Like I'm now... essentially I've beaten the game. Like the boss is like the only thing really left in terms of the main story. I'm 40 something shrines in, 43 I want to say.
Jesus.
I beat all 4 divine beasts. I have a lot of the like cool fun armor and shit like that, but I'm finally going to face the boss. But I've seen a lot of what the game has to offer, and it amazes me that most of the shrines and most of the puzzles and stuff are all things that it's like, yeah, you can totally have done that from the beginning of the game. And I think the only shrines that would give you real issue from when you first started are the ones, the test of strength,
the guardians,
where you have to fight the guardians, where they really destroy you. But now I'm playing, I'm like, wow, I'm one hitting these guys. And it's just because you get better weapons. But even then, you could have, in the beginning of the game, had I not went this way and went that way, I would have had a better weapon and that would have been fine.
Yeah, which way do I have to go to get a better weapon? Because
I mean, there's a whole bunch of different ways. And that's what's cool is
so you never at any point, like, I mean, actually I don't want to spoil it for people, but like, do you ever get the weapon? Like,
well,
do you
so
ever
here,
get
here's the
a
thing.
Weapon
I think
that doesn't fucking break?
At this point, I think we should move into spoiler conversations because like people have played this game enough.
Yeah. And spoilers, the Master Sword is in the game.
Yeah, exactly. Right.
Yeah.
Is
that something you have to come across or are you giving it?
So I got it last night. I got
to Google that shit right now.
I got the Master Sword and the Hylian Shield.
Shield.
The Master Sword, I sought out, and I sought it out based on clues and tips that every Divine Beast area has like kind of led to. Like every single one talks about, there's the legendary sword or whatever, and it's in this area. So I knew where it was. And then I go there, and like having played other Zelda games, I kind of had an idea of, all right, it's going to be in the Lost Woods. All right, I'm going to need to figure out how to navigate these magical forests that like...
So you don't get kicked through the entrance again.
Do weird shit that... Yeah, exactly. So I'm like, all right, cool. I was like, I was very satisfied with the puzzle that they had to figure that out. And going there, it wasn't frustrating. It was satisfying, like many of these puzzles are. But then when I got the sword, it felt very underwhelming.
Really?
Like the moment, I was like, oh, man, I wanted that to be way more epic than it was.
Gotcha.
And it was interesting that like you don't need to even do that. Like I could have just went to Ganon and been fine with it. And what was even more surprising to me was the shield. Granted, there might be that shield in a different place that is a bit more of like a, holy shit, here's the moment. Yeah, but... the way I got it was really just, I wasn't looking for it.
Really?
I just went and fought some guy and I'm like, oh shit, you dropped the shield?
And like, it doesn't break. Is that the deal with it?
So the thing with the shield, I'm not really clear on whether or not it breaks. I think it does.
Okay.
It's strong.
Okay.
The sword you can use and it doesn't break, but it kind of, you need to recharge it after a while.
Okay.
So it's like you can use it for a while, and it's like the old Zelda games where when you can shoot out things,
full
like
health, full health,
and, it shoots. But after a while, if you use it on normal enemies, you have to wait, I think it's like 10 minutes or something.
Gotcha.
Like it felt like 10 minutes. It might have been 15. It might have been 5 before you can use it again. But you can use it against any Ganon, any enemy that has the like that gook kind of coming off of them.
You
can use it against them without it breaking.
Interesting.
So,
see, here my problem is this, is that I obviously love Zelda. We all love Zelda. Everyone loves Zelda. What I love about Zelda is the exploration and is going to do all this stuff. Mm-hmm. But I felt like on the plane that I wasted so much time. But it wasn't a waste of time because I enjoyed it and I did all that stuff. But it was that thing of like running around the village talking to people. I'm like, well, what? And then like the side quests that I had are just like, you know, the quests I have are just like fucking fight the beast. You're like, all right, well, I know there's one in the desert, but I keep melting, and I'm not sure how to get through that yet, and I eventually figured that out, you know, I think on the way home or whatever, if it's not there. But it's to the point that, like, I really want that Master Sword. And, like, I was looking at IGN yesterday for the news stories for the morning show, and, like, they had, like, here's how to get the best armor, and I was like, oh, fuck, and I clicked on that, and then it was just, like, a giant table of all the armor layouts. Mm-hmm. I was like, oh, well, I thought you were going to tell me point by point. And then I was like, IGN. But do I want to know? Like, do
yes,
I want to know where the Master Sword
know.
Is?
I know. Well, no, I want that shit right now.
I do think that
I want
this
whatever
game,
furry armor is going to allow me not to have a fucking torch every time it gets a little breezy.
I mean, there's a whole bunch of those, though.
Good.
And I think that's what's cool about the game is when you do play it the way that it was designed, you kind of find these things out.
Yeah.
Like, from talking to random people, it might right now, it's like, oh, it's a bunch of shit that I don't need to know. But later you're going to be like, oh, that conversation I had, it does have to do with this. And I feel like it's very natural. And I found myself, I saw an article on Kotaku that's like, try to play this game without fast traveling as much as you do. Mm. If you know where you need to go, try just going there. Because on the way there, you're going to find a whole bunch of shit that you're going to want to do.
I'm assuming also at some point you get a horse, right?
Yeah, there's a whole bunch of horses. But you don't need to use it.
I keep whistling for shit and nothing comes to me.
So. Yeah, you just stand there whistling.
No, yeah.
Hitting the down D-pad. It's like...
Shout out to Jason Schreier. He has a great post up on Kotaku that is not spoilery. And here's what you should do if you're playing Zelda. And it was one of those things of going through it and like, I'm doing most of it. And there's things I'd never seen before. I was like, oh, right, that's awesome. And like... It was making that I saw Miles Luna tweet it yesterday and then Carbonia retweeted it. I think then I saw it in Shire's thing of like, if you have a rusty sword, you can throw it into the Octo or whatever and they'll spit out a non-rusty sword. You're like, that's fucking cool.
My favorite meme going around is somebody took the cover art of the game and they replaced Zelda with, I didn't know you could do that.
Yeah. That's what I was talking. I think Alana was, or no, it was Lucy O'Brien maybe talking to Alana last night. But Lucy had said something to that effect and I tweeted on me. She's like, the number of times I'm like, well, logically, this works. Like, in my head, I'm like, I'm so used to video games not doing what you think they should do. Like, oh, this is how this would easily go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And like, no.
I mean, things like, all right, you're cold, but you have a flame sword. If you have the flame sword equipped, when he puts it on his back, it keeps him warm.
Coffee? Yeah.
Interesting.
Like, shit like that. Whenever you think this should work, it does. Like, if you see a string and you're like, I could probably cut that down somehow. Yep. If you throw a sword at it or arrow it, it's gonna drop the thing.
The first shrine I got to, that had a drawbridge up, and I was like, those ropes probably should cut. Oh, they cut. Nice. That was fucking right. You know what I mean? Like, that's, I love being rewarded that way. I love doing it.
Yeah.
And then I, and it is the thing though where it's like, you know, well, only women can come into this area or whatever, so you can't go further. And I'm like, fuck, I got to cross-dress at some point. I got to get some bomb-ass girl outfit. I'm looking at every shop, and I'm like, this hair kind of looks like girl hair, and I bought it. I'm like, it's not. I'm like, no, damn it, I spent rupees on that for no reason.
Yeah.
So I don't need to be stealthy.
I love that everyone I'm talking to, there is no consensus on what the order is of how you're supposed to go through the divine beast, so that's super cool.
Well, that's the thing, too, of like, you know, I mean, I know they're in there. I've already seen one in the desert, but I still don't know where the Gorons are. Still haven't run into them, other than the one at the water. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy because, I mean, for me, Gerudo, where the desert one, I did that last, and I would swear that that is supposed to be the last one that you do. I will say, to be a little bit critical of the game, like, now that I've played so much more of it, I still think that it is, like, a 10 out of 10. But I do think that there's a lot of issues, one of them being it rains way too damn much. It was cute in the beginning, but now when I'm trying to get things done, it's really annoying to have to just wait.
Yep. That was the first one to happen to me, where it was the second time I needed to get the blue flame in the second place or whatever. I know you can do them in any order, so who knows. But when it was, I was like, all right, great. And then I was like, oh, I looked down, I saw the rain coming. I'm like, come on, God. Oh, fuck. Yeah. And I did it. And then I just like kicked rocks around for a while and walked around. And they're like, you're climbing.
You can't walk around during the rain?
You can.
No, I need a torch.
He had a torch. So and you can't climb. I mean, you can, but like you start sliding a lot. Yeah. And like when you're trying to climb a big mountain, you're running out of stamina. It's not good.
It's a bad look.
So it gets kind of annoying for that type of stuff. But that was an issue. And the other thing is, I love the pacing of this game, and I love the Divine Beast and the setup of that. I feel like it's a really good way to develop those characters and have the, like, with the voice acting and stuff. It always felt special. Like, you know what you're getting into with the, you meet the dude, you meet the culture of this area, you have like a fun kind of more gimmicky, here's something different than the rest of the game. Now you're doing a more typical dungeon. Now here's a boss fight. But my problem is, it was so samey between the four because it's you can do it in any order that you want, that it got kind of weird, where there's a lot of lines of dialogue that are centered around like, hey, you're going to do this. And then once you like with the, I'm trying not to spoil things, but like they say things that are like, hey, if you do this, then we'll do this for you. And then once you hear that four times, I'm like, I know.
Yeah,
like,
I know.
I've already seen your friends do it.
Yeah.
You know, so that got kind of, it just felt. It felt wrong to me. It felt like that was kind of an oversight, and I don't know what the real solution would be, but maybe adjusting the game as it goes, like some of the dialogue options would be cool. Because most of the stuff's not VO, it's all text-based shit. So
yeah, I feel like they don't have a choice with that, though, because the thing is, it does reward you for playing it any way you want. Like, that might have been the first time in some instances that people encounter that, you know? You also have to just kind of make sure people do know what they're doing. So I get that.
No, for sure. It's just like, it does get, especially once I noticed it at the third one, where I was like, all right, this is kind of weird. And then once I got to the fourth, I'm like, really? But again, minor complaint. But my bigger issue with the Divine Beasts in particular is, I thought the Gerudo one was a real step down. It wasn't like Water Temple Ocarina status, where I'm like, this is fucking annoying. But I thought the other three are so brilliantly designed, and every moment of them was fucking awesome. The Gerudo one has things about it that are cool, but it was a drag playing through it. Like, playing a lot of the other ones, I was like, there was moments I was frustrated, but whenever I figured it out, I was like, fuck yeah. With this one, I was like, I haven't figured out. It's frustrating to do.
Yeah.
You know,
and that's, is that because of the control scheme, or is that just because?
No.
Just not a fun boss to fight.
All the dungeons have like a different kind of gimmick to them. Yeah. Like a different mechanic that they add on top of the
dungeons.
So the
dungeons are different than shrines.
Yes.
Oh, interesting. I haven't got to a dungeon.
Yep. It's
oh, you'll know.
You'll know. You'll know. Okay. But it's.
You'll know.
Yeah. It's very clear. But anyway, again, that's just such a minor complaint, because it's so good. And even the camel one was like, all right, like. It's not horrible.
Wait, you get a camel?
What's it? You don't get a camel, but you...
Do you at any point get to buy and ride a camel?
No.
That would have taken this game up to 11 for me.
You can sand surf with walruses.
Yes.
Close second.
Yeah.
And close second.
That shit was another one of those really frustrating moments.
Where I'm like, really?
This isn't fun to control.
Oh my God, I had a great time with it. I loved it.
Well, you...
Okay.
Yep. Yeah.
You know more than me. There. You know more than me.
But anyway, that's our updated Zelda conversation. Spoilers are now stopping for anybody listening or watching or whatever.
Do we have to do this again?
Who knows? Yeah, nobody's paying attention to that. That was the thing where I was like, you know, as I talked about it in the Mass Effect review or whatever, that I came around now. But having already played the beginning of Mass Effect and then playing it again that night, it was just like, I could be playing Zelda right now. I got to do this. I mean, I want to play Mass Effect. I love Mass Effect. I'm excited to see where this goes, but I could have been doing this.
Right now, you get the choice.
Yeah.
Any game you want.
For the rest of my life?
No, just right now.
Oh, Patapon. HD. Give me some. Where's it at? Give me that Patapon. Wow, where's that Patapon? Okay. Ah!
Never mind.
Where's Infamous? What's Cole up to?
All right. Third topic.
Peace Walker 2!
We're talking about PAX East Games. Nick.
Yeah.
You can be dismissed if you would like.
Sure. Okay.
Yeah, you were here for the Mass Effect.
Thanks, guys. Thanks, everyone.
Zelda.
Let me know if you need me. I'll be in the next room
doing
games.
That's a wrap on Nick.
Yay.
Hey, Nick. Did he not play games at PAX East?
Do you want to talk about it?
No, I only played three. Nothing. That blew me away.
Okay.
Okay, then.
That's
the people's champ.
The people's champ. Nick did play a game at PAX East, and that game was Snake Pass, where he won the Nintendo World Championship.
You're welcome, world.
But you like Snake Pass, right?
Yeah, it's super fun. I played that, and I played a game called AB, which was a cute game that I thought was fun. A little platformer. Not really a platformer.
Oh. Did you guys see that? Right.
The best friend?
AB?
I think it's called AB.
Oh, is it AB?
AB, like it's a robot. That's how the guy pronounced it.
ABI is how you spell it.
Yeah, it's ABI. But I'll
talk about that real quick. Go for it.
I was obviously
Mike.
Back to the mic.
He's getting there. He's coming. Hold on, Chief.
You shouldn't talk.
Okay, my apologies. Love you.
Which one of us really shouldn't talk anymore, Kevin?
Oh.
Jesus Christ. I saw that game. It caught out of the corner of my eye as you guys were playing in the, I forget whose booth that was.
It was the Indie Maker booth.
And it's a cool little game, man. It's got a great art style. It's very oddly reminiscent of WALL-E, so you're not really sure what happened. Like, it's just a bunch of robots that are around. You're not sure what happened to the people. And there's two robots that you have. It's you and your friend, and you guys walk through this world and have to kind of pop into buildings to puzzle solve or problem solve some of the puzzles to get actually, I guess, to your destination. And you're looking for something the entire time. I can't remember what.
Love.
I think it's a bird or a cat or something. I didn't quite catch that much. I was more worried. The guy next to me had pretzels, and I was like, fuck, I want a pretzel so bad right now.
Classic.
Was it one of the soft pretzels that we bought that were terrible?
No, it was a rolled bag goals? Of like the bigger rolled goals. You know, like the cigar when you...
Yeah, remember being a kid? Yeah.
So I was like, damn, where did you get those for one? That looks cool. I wanted to play Ape Out.
Ape Out's here on my list.
Ape Out, I think, is... Game I would show? Say our game of the show.
Now, you're saying that. Don't forget about Emily is Away, too.
Oh, that's true, but...
I mean, that's a slam dunk.
That's a slam dunk.
Which one? Did you end up playing Emily Was Away?
We watched a little bit of the we don't of need playing to. It. We're like, I know.
As great. Emily Is Away, number one's best, biggest fans, Tim and Greg don't need to play Emily Got it. Is Away, too. Emily we watched it. It was great.
We'll get to that in a second. Ape Out. I would say that as the Kind of Funny Games game of the show.
Game of the show, Ape Out. Devolver.
Because, man, Devolver Digital, it's coming to PC and PS4.
Yeah.
And it's essentially like Hotline Miami. Look,
it's
like
top down. Yeah.
And you are a gorilla that escaped from the zoo.
Yeah. Is it a zoo?
Oh, I don't know.
I don't think it's a zoo.
There's a lot of guns involved.
There's a lot. Your armed soldiers and guards are all over the place. It's got this really simplistic art style where the ape and the ones we were watching was bright orange. The guys are like silhouettes-ish. The level is silhouette-ish, and then like you can see like the floor is like
it's very stylish. It's a lot of just big bold colors, right. Like single flat colors, and the soundtrack. It's like a rolling like freestyle jazz song, and everything you do
makes
drum noises.
It's kind of like here and there, slam someone around.
So yeah, you're the giant ape. You smash through the glass to begin the level, and then you go through, and you kill as many guys as you can. You come up to giant steel doors you can rip down, and then use the shield and throw it to smush dudes. There are dudes that have guns who are like the normal enemies, and there's dudes that have explosives that are like harder to do it. You know, early on enemies, they take a long time to shoot. Later on, they don't as much. And you go through, so if you get hit too, then you bleed out the orange as you go so people can kind of follow you and see. And the idea is to get from, always just go right. But like, it's not always just a straight line to the right of the screen. It is, you know, a crazy go through this corridor, go over here, smash this glass, go over that way, blah, blah. And what was cool, I thought, was when you die, and also when you, I guess we'd be level more, it's more important when you die, because the guy in front of me who hogged it would never let me on. when he would die over and over again, it would pull out and show you the path you took through this. I think they're randomly generated levels. The path you took and then where you died and how close you were to the exit. And so this guy kept getting close and kept getting pwned because he sucked and he should have let me play. But I'm just, you know, no big deal. No big deal.
Dicks out for Apeout.
Dicks out for Apeout, indeed. Apeout was great. The love of my life. Jean-Vive Saint-Ange says you can play it if you the trailer is playable.
The YouTube trailer is playable, which doesn't make sense to me.
Is that true? Or is it YouTube or is it over on Devolver?
I mean, it must be on Devolver, but I mean, I watched it on YouTube today and it said play this trailer.
Oh, okay.
But it must be maybe it's a click. You click in and it takes it over to
the
site.
Yeah, you got it. It has to go somewhere else, right?
Yeah, you can't play it on YouTube.
That sounds fucking weird.
Bring it up. Play it down here, Kev. I want to see how good you can be at Apeout. All right, down here, I'll fill time while you go.
I wrote
these notes about
we can talk about during that time. That game looks fantastic. If you haven't seen Emily is Away, it's a game where you essentially, it took place between like 2003 and 2006, and you're on AOL Instant Messenger, having a conversation, and like kind of you get to make choices and stuff. But no matter how you played it, it ended in the same place.
Right.
We did a Let's Play. You should watch it. YouTube.com/kindoffunnygames.
If you watch it and you enjoy it, go buy the game.
Yes.
That's what I always say. Because we loved that game. We played it all the way through.
The dev?
I'm going to check for you. I want to. I know it's one of
the homie.
It's one of those where I know his Twitter handle, and like that's not his name.
Yeah. So that game looks great. Emily's Way 2 looks even better.
Do you remember the
like 2006?
Yeah, I remember it was later. It was later, yeah.
And it's not just AIM now. You use AIM, but you can then go on Facebook. You can open up Mozilla Firefox to open up YouTube. And YouTube and Facebook look like they did during that time. And you can watch actual videos.
That was the coolest thing is that when he showed us, we're going in. Okay, let's go in. We're going to, look. I'm going to show you what's going on here with this. It's like, okay, cool. Kyle. And that's what throws me off every time. Oh, I'm like, that's not what his Twitter handle looks like. I always think of the Emily is Away account, which is her screen name, which is at EMERZ35. And then Kyle's is Kyle Seeley 23. So his is very on the nose. Yeah. But yeah. That was so cool. It was like having all before it was just your AOL Instant Messenger, right? And this time it is you have the World Wide Web, but in that same Emily's Away style there.
Yep.
Where, you click and you open Facebook, and sure enough, it had, like, the Leave Britney Alone video, but it had the thumbnail that was, like, it looked like pixelated. It was, like, yeah, and I was, like, so did you redo the video? I was, like, oh, no, it links to the real video. It gives the real video the view. I'm, like, that's fucking awesome. What a great idea.
So awesome.
Suck that in. But,
in May 2017. Multiple endings.
Yeah.
And if you type in Tim Geddes or Game Over Greggy or those combinations, your little buddy icon can be a kind of funny smiley.
Yeah.
That was a fun little thing you put in there for us.
Tim, how you doing? You got the Ape. Or I'm sorry, Tim, how you doing? Kevin, how you doing? You got the Ape Out demo, huh?
Yeah, that's
the
deal. You have to install it.
Oh, okay.
So I don't. This doesn't seem like any cool.
Okay.
Anyways, the game looks awesome.
Maybe Jean-Vive Saint-Ange lied to us, but I doubt it.
This is definitely not a indie game, but I just want to make a mention. I didn't play it, but got to see Crash.
That Crash man.
Insane trilogy with the new level, the Hang 8, which is from Crash 2. They're killing it with this game. Can't wait to fucking play it. It looks so good. I didn't want to wait in line and do the whole thing for this because I have a feeling they'll send us a build eventually. And I already played 2 out of 3 levels at PSX. So I'm like, and also I'm quite familiar. So I wanted to spend more time playing other things. Was there any other game that you...
I got a whole bunch, not a whole bunch, but I got some. Semblance. This is the one we stopped at. We got a very short demo from, but it was a callback to the developer Ben had emailed me. And his subject line was, an African team fat game dev at PAX East. Like, clearly a real fan, like, knew what it was. And so the idea with Semblance is that it is a platformer, but it's a world deformer. So you have the line. You look like a simple gumdrop, and you go through. And they'll be like, you need to get up to this block or whatever it is here, but the platform's here, and you jump up there, and you can't get up to the block you need to get to. So you go underneath, you jump up into the platform that's above you, and you make like...
So it'll like kind of like bump it up so that you can
go on it. It bumps your head up, it makes a line, and you can then climb up there and do it.
He described it as if the world was made of Play-Doh. And so when you can kind of like whatever you do will form things that way.
You can tell he's demoed the game a few times. That's a really good way to promote.
And also he was talking about like the wall jumps where when you wall jump back and forth, it's not like a normal platformer where it's just like bouncing off. When you bounce, you make little divots. So you go in there, you can kind of hang out for a second.
Same thing.
And then
right.
It's over.
Yeah. So it's taking what we already know mechanically and making it something different, which is actually super interesting. Right. For that one, it's out in 2017 on PC and Mac is what they say, but that will definitely come over to some.
That's the thing. A lot of these games that we play, they're right now they're PC, but talking to them, they're all like, we want to get them on consoles.
And I'm sure everybody's doing it right now, right?
Out of green light and all that. I saw one called Snippers. Okay. Or Snipers. Yeah, I guess Snipers would make more sense. I got snipper clips on the brain.
You do.
They describe it as a bouncing bullets four-player Towerfall style game.
Uh-huh.
So it's four players, all one screen. You're kind of jumping around, and you're shooting, and it's like an angled shooter, so you have all your different like the analogs of where to go.
Sure.
And when you shoot, your bullet starts bouncing, and your bullet can kill you. So it turns to like a bullet hell.
Yeah,
of your own creation with four other people. So gotcha. It looked kind of cool. And obviously the stages have a bunch of different obstacles and things you can hide behind. And there was some weird gravity stuff they had going on where you can shoot the bullet and it would get caught in a thing and like go another way.
Yeah.
So that I thought that looked pretty cool. It's still in active dev. It's PC only for now.
Gotcha. The one I want to give a shout out to is Badass Hero.
Mm.
Now, here's what I'm going to say, and this is a tall order, but stick with me, you, the listener / viewer. It's come up a bunch with Colin and I on PSLW and on this show, where we talk about how Rogue Legacy ruined roguelikes for us, right? Because every roguelike that comes out now, you play, you're like, oh, great, and I hope it's like Rogue where I die, and then I can take whatever my progress is in some respect and make myself stronger, right? And so many games don't do that, and they fuck it up. And you're like, well, Enter the Gungeon's cool, but I feel like I'm not making any progress. Why do I want to keep playing it, right? This I'm going to read you a little bit of information here off the email, because, again, here, Martin, the dev on this one, Badass Hero, hit me up. Badass Hero is a roguelite platformer shooter where you play inside a comic book, move from frame to frame, and turn enemies into ink to write your own story anew. The game features fast-paced hit-and-run gameplay, procedural generation of levels, and various items that make every playthrough different, all in extremely polished, modern, high-resolution 2D art. Right now, it's still a ways out. Q1 2018, of course, these are indie devs, which probably means...
Who knows?
Who the fuck knows? Xbox One and PlayStation 4 versions are included or whatever. So now I'm jumping back to my notes about it. I set it up. Comic books. Everything's awesome. It doesn't look as like... No, I don't want to say good because that's not what I mean. But it doesn't look as intense or maybe as engaging as Rogue Legacy. But I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing because Rogue Legacy was really fucking tough for a long time. And this one looks like I have guns and I'm in there and I'm shooting and I'm in it and I'm blood splattering all over me. I'm like, this looks really cool. And it's, you know, this cartoony art as you run through and do it and do all these different things. The one I was watching was a World War II comic. There's different comics, different settings. So there's World War II, there's an alien invasion. Oh, I'm sorry, actually, I was in the Jungle Book. There's not the Jungle Book, but a jungle comic. There's a World War II comic and an alien invasion one. You earn skill points through the ink that you're playing with. Right now, there's 8 mini bosses through per book, 3 big bosses per book. You go through, you play through this. It was a cool, you know, Comic Zone is one of those games that everybody's like, it should have been great, but it wasn't great. And like, da, da.
Yeah.
This is similar in the way of like the map is the comic book panels. And you kind of, when you see where you're going, as you do in any roguelike, right, where you can kind of see where you should be or where you've been, like those panels light up then, you see it in the same way of like knowing there's panels above you or over there and then making that choice to go to them to go fight things and get covered in blood and do all that stuff. It was definitely one that I was like, cool, this looks like a really fun game. I don't know if it's going to be great, but it looks like a game I would definitely want to play.
Awesome. I had a couple more I want to talk about. There's one called Dimension Drive. Mm-hmm. It's one of those vertical scrolling shoot 'em ups where you're in your little jet or whatever spaceship going up the screen, right? And like shooting things and kind of like a bullet storm, bullet hell type thing. But the screen is split in two and you have two ships going up at once. But it depends on what dimension you're in. So one's a parallel dimension to the other.
A parallel dimension.
You're only actually like wherever your ship is, it is in the same place in both of them. But your ship only exists in one of the dimensions at any given time. Mm-hmm. So you see where your ship would be in the other dimension.
Okay.
And it's kind of like a puzzle type game.
Sure.
Where as you're going up, there'll be obstacles that you have to like switch over to the other thing and get in the right position and switch. And when I was playing it, I was like, this is cool, good idea, a little simple in execution. Within like 5 minutes of playing, I was just like, oh wow, this is really, they were just teaching me the mechanics.
That's awesome.
Like there's
a lot
going on here. Right now, again, only PC, but it looked super awesome. And I liked the look of it, very comic inspired and goofy story going on about the dimensions. And I was like, this looks awesome. Hope it comes to consoles.
Yeah.
Duck Game is a game that I think it's already out on PC. fully. I know it's definitely, it's already out in early access, but I think it's already totally out. I've seen a lot of Let's Plays, and it's another Towerfall type game. You're a bunch of little ducks running around shooting stuff, and it looks funny as hell. Coming to the Switch, so I was like, all right, I want to give it a shot. I can actually play it because I'm excited.
On that level, I mean, Mr. Shifty was there. I can't sing the praises of Mr. Shifty enough. If you missed last week's Gamescast, What Remains of Edith Finch was there. Not that that's Switch related, but now I'm just talking about games that I already know I'm sold on, so I don't take the demo.
Sonic Mania.
Edith Finch, I'm talking about trying to come through for a demo before games released. Perception was there, which is a game I backed on Kickstarter, which is that one, you know, where you don't can't see but you do see thing. I didn't get that set up in time to go play it, but I already know that I like that game.
Last Pyre two for me. There. Yeah. Rain World, which is a game we saw on the morning show. It's Adult Swim Games, and Adult Swim Games, man, shout out to them.
They're really trying to
Like, actually, let's get good games and not just license stuff, but then let's make our licensed stuff good as well.
That's what you thought it was going to be at first. It was just going to be Adult Swim properties, right? And then it was, I think it was like last PAX where they had a really big booth and a really big activation. They were showing a whole bunch of awesome shit. You're like, oh, fuck.
But what's cool about them is it seems like they're doing for indie games what Adult Swim does for anime or for cartoons or for, I mean, any of their shows that they've had. It has that same kind of feel that Adult Swim always has. Watching Rain World, it looks like a Panda Musk animation.
Hell yeah.
With the pixel art and all that. And you're this, what do they call it? Slug Cat? Yeah, you're a slug cat. And it's very interesting. They're calling it a survival platformer.
Okay.
So just like kind of, it's just a platformer in the sense that you're just, you know, hopping around and kind of getting through the levels, but then there'll be things chasing you down. So you do need to kind of like run away from stuff. And it does have like a survival horror vibe to it.
Okay.
But it's a 2D platformer. So very up my alley. I liked that a lot. And then there was another game that I didn't play. I just saw it. It's called Katana Zero. Okay. Also from Adult Swim Games. They describe it as a fast paced neo noir action platformer, focusing on tight, instant death, acrobatic combat, and a dark 80s neon aesthetic. So I'm like, all right, obviously I'm sold on this. So aided with your trusty katana, the time manipulation drug Kronos, and the rest of your assassin's arsenal, fight your way through a fractured city and take back what's rightfully yours. So I'm like, all right, I'm totally fucking in. The music sounds like Kavinsky, and I'm like, all right, this looked great.
Sure.
So that was it for me.
Yeah, there was so much cool... The problem, I put in quotes, there's just so much shit. Awesome shit at PAX East now, and PAX anything. And the problem is, I think we talked about it, or maybe I was talking to somebody from Rooster Teeth about how it's just been interesting how our careers have evolved. Of when I remember going and doing GameScoop panels, right? It was always, the Q&A was always led off by, what did you see? You know what I mean? And we would still do it, and then it was, but what was the coolest thing you saw? And people stopped asking us that a few years ago because we moved to this entertainer vibe, where it is like, this year, we had the one panel and the Prey activation, and that was like, those were our responsibilities. Mm-hmm. And so to have time to walk the floor was great, but it was also that we're there to meet people, and like people kept stopping us, and that was awesome and fantastic. I'm trying to stop that. But there's no way to see everything anymore. Yep. Where I remember covering the first PAX East, and like, I saw everything. I put up articles about like, here's all these awesome things you should see for IGN. And like, to have it where it is now, where there's just so much awesome shit everywhere. Awesome shit. Yeah, it's amazing.
Very, very
great
cool.
Time to be a gamer.
Stay tuned to all of that stuff.
Keep it locked to the Kinda Funny Games Cast. Right. Never mind the fact I put on a sweatshirt. Don't worry about it.
That's the thing. Whatever. Topic four, as always.
But the thing is, I was hot when we were doing the other topics.
Brought to you by you. You can go to kindoffunny.com/gamescast topic just like all these people did
to
leave your
to
questions,
talk to Jen,
comments, and concerns.
And, it was cold.
And we'll address them.
I'd like to.
Yeah, who is Jen?
Thank you for asking. Jen's my girlfriend. I don't talk about her a lot.
She makes a world of me.
You're really good at fake crying.
Yeah?
Like in a
well,
way
I'm really good at real crying, too, as
you are,
seen.
But that's the thing. Is it always, when you're real crying, there's times where I'm not sure if you're fake crying, and when you're fake crying, I'm not sure if you're real crying.
Gotcha.
You just keep me fucking...
You never know anymore.
Off my knock.
That's why they call me the Viper, because Vipers cry on cue, and that's how they trick people into coming over. Is this snake hurt? And then...
Is this snake hurt? Holy shit.
I looked around the room to see if we had one of the snake pass snakes in here that Kev could toss my way, and I was going to send Kev a telepathic link to toss me it, but he never did. But I didn't see the snake, so that's why I didn't do it.
The link.
I know, I didn't do it. I didn't do it.
So before, I got a question. Bad. I got an audience question.
Sure.
Snake pass.
Yeah.
Is it the business?
Yeah, it's cool. Real cool. We have a Let's Play.
Are we putting it up ever?
Yeah. I don't know if you've noticed, Kevin.
I have not.
It's been a week. And so it's kind of like, let's just let everything breathe. People want to be mean to us. Go ahead. We got it. We can take it. I don't feel like letting people be mean to our guests. And so I feel bad of like, hey, Snake Pass is a great game. Here's a Let's Play. I'm mad about Colin. I'm like, well, I understand that, but can we talk? Oh, you just want to keep talking about that. Okay, well, that's fine. Again, as we've said a million times in the morning show.
Feel your feelings.
Everybody vent. Everybody feel your feelings. That's fine. But yeah, I'm not putting out. We have a ton of awesome Let's Plays from GDC that I want to put out. They're all timeless, so it doesn't matter. But timeless. Yeah. Snake Pass, great.
Okay.
Snake Pass, really cool.
I'm excited about it. It was fun watching you guys play at PAX East.
Yeah, no. And the Let's Play is great too. And that was the thing we drank during it because that was even better. But that's the kind of game that it reminds me of. And that's that's an interesting game of, I think I'm going to play Snake Pass on the Switch because I can play it anywhere. But then once I know it, go play it on the PlayStation to get my platinum. You know what I mean? Because I don't have all the, I'll be an expert. I have all the things about it. But it's one of the easy ones you always say, right? Easy to pick up, difficult to master. Yeah. Like, you know what I mean? It's cool to actually have that momentum of being a snake and how do we work. Yeah, you like that?
I do.
If memory serves, Seb is coming through next week, and his story is super fascinating because he works over at Sumo Digital.
Mm-hmm.
They made Big Planet 3. Seb and Dino, who's in the Let's Play you'll eventually see, both of them got hired at Sumo because they were so great at creating Little Big Planet levels. So we're going to have Seb come in for a topic to talk about, sure, how he made Snake Pass, but more importantly, how he went from being
now he's here.
Exactly. How he went from just
slithered his way up.
All right. You know what? Get it all out of your system now. If you embarrass me in front of this man, he was a teacher before this.
Was he?
Mm-hmm.
And then he switched it up.
Nice. That was a good one.
First question comes from Joshua Steele. He says, where does Pokemon need to go as a franchise? Move on from mobile and focus on Switch? Well, here's the thing. When you say mobile, I'm assuming you
Pokemon
just mean
Go.
I think
you think he means DS games.
I think it means DS.
Okay.
So it's like this is a tough question to answer.
Sure.
I think that Pokemon needs to keep going on actual mobile. The Pokemon Go, obviously, that's a success. If they can find a way to get a Pokemon game in the style of Super Mario Run or Fire Emblem Heroes, where it's like, all right, we're going to take this franchise and mobilize it in a way that is of a Nintendo quality, but it's dumbed down for mobile controls. Cool. That'll be great. Grow the franchise that way. That's awesome. In terms of what to do next with the franchise, for years people have talked about, I want the MMO and whatever. And it's like, yeah, and that could be really cool. I don't think Nintendo would do it, and I don't think they would do it right.
Right.
So that is
when you think online infrastructure, you don't think of Nintendo.
Exactly. Some type of persistent world where you can play it offline and it does have a lot of stuff. And then you keep adding on expansions, kind of like GTA 5 online does.
Yeah.
I think that could work in a really cool way. But I think right now.
But even that, do you think that's a possibility that they'd ever do?
I don't know. I mean,
here's my thing as an outsider from Pokemon, right? Because I played, what was it, Soul Silver on the DS one with the pedometer we all had at IGN. I played that for a little bit. Didn't
the
beat
best.
It was fun. And I played Pokemon Go.
Mm-hmm.
The thing I see from as an outsider looking at the Pokemon franchise and their handheld versions is that Pokemon is comfort food. Pokemon is, I mean, you want to give EA shit for Madden. You want to give Activision shit for Call of Duty. Pokemon is even more an affront to what you accuse them of. Pokemon is, cool, now they're tropical Pokemon, you know what I mean? You're still just running around catching them, and it's just, we changed a little bit, but that's what it is. It doesn't seem like I'm just, again, casual fan or casual observer, that there's not these giant leaps.
Mm-hmm.
And so for them to go and be like, here's this cash cow, this thing that makes $1 million all the time, this thing that I think speaks to my point of what Nintendo is good at, of we make toys. They make a toy, it's Pokemon, you know what it is, you're going to be excited for it, you're not going to be excited for it. Why would they fuck with that and invest millions of dollars into making an MMO, into making a persistent world, into making anything outside of what's the proven track seller that people want and continue to buy?
Yeah. I mean, you bring up a lot of interesting points. I think that when you look at Pokemon as a franchise overall, it's different from what you're saying about the EA's type of stuff because it's not annualized.
Sure.
Like there is years between each one. And yeah, the formula is always the same. And that's the problem that even I have with it. But I feel like and again, I am a huge Pokemon fan. Having said that, I am not a hardcore Pokemon fan. I couldn't tell you all the differences
between
the latest gens and all that. But when it comes down to it, like I had a really good time with Sun and Moon because it was way different than what I expected in terms of story progression, and there wasn't gyms, and they did a lot of stuff where it wasn't what I expected, which was the more kind of EA style where it's like, hey, it's just it with different monsters.
We reskin stuff.
Yeah, like ironically to me, it's the Aloha version. It was the first time I was like, oh no, the Aloha shit is actually just the location's different, but the entire thrust of the game is different because of that.
Okay.
You're still catching Pokemon, and whatever. Having said that, I still want more. But you're right. Like, these games, every time they come out, they sell millions and millions of copies each. When you combine them both, because they are essentially the same game, that they're going to track on the NPD forever.
Yeah.
You know, for the entire console's life cycle. So we're in a weird place now, because traditionally with Pokemon, it's you get the two versions, and then within 2 years, you get the third version. A couple times we've seen little change-ups with that, where like with Black and White, there was Black and White 2 instead of gray or whatever, and it's probably because gray is a shitty color.
Whoa!
But then we also see the remakes that have started. We got the remakes of Red and Blue, then we got the remakes of Gold and Silver, then we got the remakes of Ruby and Sapphire.
Sure.
We're at a place now where it's like, what are they going to do next?
I mean, I would really love to see them blow the top off and do something different. But I just don't know if that's what they're actually thinking about doing. Because for me, it's the same thing of, if they're selling the way they're... this is the Ubisoft thing of like, we're going to keep making Assassin's Creed every year until you stop buying them. And then they saw the dips and they're like, all right, we're going to take our time, we're going to take our foot off the gas. And it's the same way as I sit here and I'm always like, man, why doesn't 2K take the WWE game and blow it up and do it from the ground? Because they sell fine. They have, this is their projected number, and they must be hitting it or clearing it every year. So what does it matter?
And I think the other thing too is the Pokemon games are still great. Like, it's not like there's been some that aren't as good as the others.
Too much water.
But they're well, that one's great. It's a remake of Ruby and Sapphire. Yeah. But the thing is, with them now, we're in a weird place where, all right, are we really going to get a remake of Diamond and Pearl? Those are games that came out on the DS. I don't know that we need that necessarily.
Yeah.
Like Ruby and Sapphire, at least those were Game Boy Advance games. So we're starting to get to a point where it's like, all right, cool. Is this even necessary? Then on the other side of it, of the third game, it's like, okay, we got Sun and Moon last November. These are new games still. So the rumors of Pokemon Stars, very interesting to me. What happens with that? Does it go on 3DS and Switch, or is it a Switch exclusive? I don't even know. It's we're kind of stuck in between gens, both with the 3DS as a system and with Pokemon as a franchise, where Pokemon Stars is going to be huge for the Switch. I can imagine that they're going to put it out and it's going to be on both consoles, if I had to bet. Because why wouldn't they put it on the 3DS as well and sell millions of copies, right? But I think this would be the last time we see that happen. Then the next Pokemon game, which will probably take a couple years to come out, probably, I would guess, within the next 2 years would be announced. I don't know what that's going to be. Is it going to be, all right, this is Switch from the ground up? Or is it going to be, here's another 3DS game?
Yeah.
Or a game that can be on both? Or can both kind of live together? Can there be two Pokemon franchises in the same way that there's 2D and 3D Mario games? Mm-hmm. Will we see a world where there still is the smaller Pokemon adventure that we think of as the handheld games, where you go through the 8 gyms and the Elite Four, and that still exists, but then the Switch does try something different, makes it a bit more of an RPG, like a console RPG, and give it the Breath of the Wild treatment, in the sense of, we're going to blow up this franchise and try something different with it, even though people love Zelda. You know, and I can see them kind of doing both. And I fully expect that they're going to release smaller Zelda games that are not Breath of the Wild, that are more similar to Link Between
Spirit
Worlds.
Spirit Tracks and stuff like that.
Where it's like even more like 2D style things. And sure. I think that the Switch is uniquely positioned to be able to, hopefully, once the 3DS is done, have both of those experiences and have them both be seen at the same level, where it's not, oh, this is better than that. It's just, oh shit, these are both good.
Okay.
So I don't know. Pokemon has a lot to do to prove it to me that it can do the thing that we all wanted to, which is a proper console RPG. Like, I think the MMO is being a little too wishful thinking. I think a proper RPG they're capable of, and we're just getting closer and closer. Even Sun and Moon, it's like, all right, they're 3D.
Yeah.
Like, they feel a bit more like PlayStation 3D games, but PS1.
I understood what you meant.
We got Pokemon Coliseum and Pokemon XD on the GameCube, and those were RPGs. They just weren't what we wanted, because it wasn't just copy and paste of here's the gym battles and all this stuff. So they're in a bad place from a, I got an opinion standpoint. They're in a great place from sales and the people that play the game standpoint.
Here's a question for you. This is switching tracks, kind of, but it's similar of Nintendo franchise and what's going to happen now that the Switch is here. I know every calls for it all the time. You assume there's a Metroid game in development that's coming for the Switch, and it's going to be what everybody wants and da da da. When you say that, and when you think about a Metroid game coming to the Switch, what perspective are you thinking it's going to be? Do you think, because I think a Metroid Prime would look awesome on this.
Well, so that's, I mean, that, again, you're bringing up another point where it's like, we're at Nintendo franchises have been around for so long and have seen so many different kind of evolutions and like just reformat periods where different things exist. And Metroid has never sold well traditionally. Sure. So it's like, it sells good, but like not astronomical. Sure. That's why they
it's not pushing,
haven't
you
made
know,
them
all
the time.
All stuff.
I honestly think the easy answer is Metroid Prime. I think that that is what people want, even though people want a 2D Metroid game. Like I want a fusion sequel, a Super Metroid style game like that. Give it to some developer that really cares about
Way
making
forward?
That shit look good. I mean, yeah, exactly. But like something like that, whereas, I mean, even retro, honestly, like people would fucking go just ballistic. If retro came out, I was like, we're making Metroid, but it's 2D.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
They did such a good job with Donkey Kong Country Returns and especially Tropical Freeze that I'm like, I trust them to do a 2D Metroid game. They obviously know Metroid. They did Prime. I worry that if Prime doesn't have something extra, I don't know that I need a Prime 4. We got Prime 2, which was which was great. But it's not Prime. Prime is amazing. Prime is a masterpiece. Prime 2 was great. Prime 3 was like, all right, it's just more.
Here's an embarrassing question from the Sega kid who has no lineage to this. Are all the Metroid games in the same timeline? Like, don't get me wrong. I know Metroid, Super Metroid, Prime, and then Other M. Like, that's where it gets... I mean, I know Other M was because it had the creepy trailer of like, I saw the baby Metroid and it loved me.
They're all in the same thing. I mean, they're just like the weird spin-off
stuff. Sure that, exactly.
I don't know about Metroid Prime Hunters and Federation
Sure.
I'm sure that somehow they're related. But in terms of the canon, there's direct
Samus has her
with all of them. So I feel like they could blow it up, but they wouldn't. There's not really a need. Like, it's not like the canon is that important in Metroid, and it's more about the experience that you have. But
turn into a little ball.
I don't know. A Metroid that functions more like I want to stop just always being like, do what Breath of the Wild did, because that's just getting expectations high. But I mean, these franchises kind of need it. Like, Nintendo has been doing the same thing for so long with
do you think we'll
franchises.
See that? Because I think that's the thing. Zelda is a lot like Mario. Where, great, another Mario game. No one ever really says that. But, great, another Mario game. But Mario games are distinctly different as you go. You know what I mean? 64 is not Super Mario World, is not Sunshine, is not 3D Galaxy. World. Exactly. And so even Zelda, where it's like, with the exception of Majora's Mask, right? It's not, you know, Ocarina of Time is not. And the story is, and the ideas, but the gameplay and the mechanics, and I'm a dog now, and now I'm fucking...
I would argue, though, that...
Wind Waker.
...that the Mario games are more diverse than the Zelda games are.
I don't think that's an argument. I agree with you 1,000%.
I think that you can kind of really lump Mario into now very distinct categories, which is 2D games...
3D.
3D open world games, which include 64 Sunshine. Then the... 3D obstacle course platformer games that are like Crash Bandicoot, so the 3D World, 3D Land, and Mario Galaxy 1 and 2 are somewhere in between those two things, because a lot of levels are pretty big and open, but at the end of the day, they're still bite-sized, small, linear things, so they're similar to 3D World. With Zelda, visually, Wind Waker looks very different than Ocarina.
Sure.
But from a gameplay perspective and from a design standpoint, they're very similar games.
You're right. I forgot that in Ocarina I was on the boat all the time. Mike drops you later.
You're right. You're fucking right. But Zelda has the kind of the trope of usually there's two different worlds, whether it's different times or like dark world, light world, or this or that. Okay. Or, you know. So, and then Twilight Princess and Skyward Sword, I think, also fall into that. Where it gets interesting is then there's the 2D Zelda games, like the top-down Zelda games. And even those kind of have their... Then there's the touch side with Phantom Hourglass and Spirit Tracks. But I think that Link Between Worlds did to 2D Zelda games what Breath of the Wild did for the 3D Zelda games to a lesser extent. But being able to kind of buy your weapons whenever you want and it opens up the world, you can kind of tackle it how you want to from a top-down perspective... Mm-hmm. I think that could be really interesting for a Metroid game as well. Kind of just drop that bomb where it's like, what if you're playing Metroid and it's not you start off with all your powers, then you immediately lose them all, then you need to go back and gain them all back. It's like, no, what if you had them?
You were just the Samus from the get-go.
Yeah, and it's like, and it's something similar to Breath of the Wild, where it's like, you have all the tools, it's just a matter of figuring out how to use them together. But again, I kind of want to see that in a 2D world more than a 3D world, but... I'll be fucking stoked if I get a Metroid Prime. Yeah. But I want a 2D Metroid game even more.
Cool. Yeah. Can I tell you how excited I am for the Switch? Like, as we talk about all this shit, and it's just even the thing of, and this is, again, just me being, you know, a biased asshole. If they were just to, and I know that this happened, but I mean, put all the Primes together again and put them out on the Switch. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And, like, make it through eShop if that's actually one of the things they're pushing for and do all that crap. Because, like, I didn't want to play it on Wii U, and also there's too many games on Wii. But now that this thing is with me all the time, I'd love to play that stuff.
Yep.
Because I remember, man, when Metroid Prime dropped, I remember sitting in the living room in college and watching Kyle Hayes, my roommate, one of my best friends in the whole world, play through it nonstop. You know what I mean?
Oh, Metroid fucking Prime. Metroid Prime's one of those games. Mm-hmm. You know? Mm-hmm. And that's why, like, Prime 2, it was good. And then 3 was a bit more action. You know, like, that's usually the way that these sure. things go. But, man, Prime was such a special game.
We made it through one question. I apologize.
We did make it. That's fine. That's totally fine.
I guess two, actually.
I'm gonna wrap it on just one more. Okay. This one, I want your
thoughts. Good conversations.
On this. Yeah. Joe Frantic. What do you guys think about Rime being $10 more on the Switch than its competitors? Will this start a trend? It's also coming out later on the Switch.
I think that's some bullshit.
It is. Yeah. I wonder why.
Yeah. Dude, yeah. I haven't heard any. Nobody got a quote on this? Let me Google it around.
Beep, boop, boop.
But no, I mean, Rime, first off, looks great. Uh-huh. I was really surprised because, of course, Rime was that game. Oh, Tequila Works. It's going to be a PlayStation exclusive. Then PlayStation apparently came in one day and was like, took the dev kits. Like, this game sucks. And then I saw it at Day of the Devs and I was like, oh, okay, cool. And then I checked in at PAX East. I ran over to Surprise Pology, who was playing it. And I was like, what do you think of it? He's like, oh, it's good. It's a little floaty here or there, but like, this is enjoyable so far. And it looks like a weird Eco meets Witness meets a bit of, you know, if it's already Eco, it already feels like Last sure. Guardian. But yeah, you know what I mean? Of like, you're in that same vein of like exploring this beautiful, colorful world or whatever. So hold on. Rime. You fill time. Talk
Rime
about
Switch.
Rime Switch.
But yeah, I'm loving my Switch too. It's been fantastic. Yeah.
Get a Switch, man.
You should.
Buy Tim's.
What do you mean buy Tim's?
There's another one.
Is there?
Mm-hmm.
Where?
It's in my house right now. I keep forgetting to bring it.
Huh.
Hmm. Huh. Oh, cartridge is what people are complaining about?
There's no way.
Well, this is from BGR, which I've never heard of.
Oh, no, it's that problem again. The expensive cartridges.
No, but these are carts. These are cheap.
Yeah, it's
not a problem.
Forbes. The cost of Nintendo Switch cartridges could hurt third-party support. This is by Paul Tassi. This week, Eurogamer has published an interesting piece about why a few games are just flat out more expensive on the Switch than they are elsewhere. They look at a pair of indie games, Rime and Puyo Puyo Tetris, which cost £10 more, or maybe that's pounds, more than the same versions of the game on other platforms. What they found is the cost of manufacturing Switch cartridges increased the cost for these developers, particularly indie games with a smaller run, and that they can't make their digital versions cheaper because Nintendo demands price parity between its physical and digital media in a bid not to upset brick-and-mortar mom-and-grop shops. I added the mom-and-grop. So even with no increase in production cost for digital, both versions of Rime cost $40 on the Switch, or £40, as opposed to £30 elsewhere.
Huh. Something about that seems off and weird to me.
That does, I mean, sucks. But yeah. You figure that it makes sense, right?
It does.
Because you figure, let's talk about means of production, right? That it's like, it's so many people have the ability to make a disc, so it's cheaper. There's different places to go to, depending on actually who you work with, different places to go to and do it. Whereas with cartridges, there must be few people manufacturing these things.
Yeah, and I mean, this seems like something that would affect indie games the that most, are trying to go physical the most. But it's just like, well, at that point, don't go physical then.
Do they have a choice or is that not a choice? Is Nintendo's policy everything's everywhere? Or is
no,
it,
okay. Definitely not.
I don't know. Sorry. No.
So that's like, all right, well, then don't go physical. Something about this, I'm like, that doesn't sound right. Like,
well, the thing about it,
like,
though,
Bomberman
too.
Bomberman R, it's like, okay, then you shouldn't have went physical if it was going to bump the price up that much.
Yeah, I hear you. But the thing would be that with this, I don't know. Let me check into who. Do you know who's publishing Rime? We know who's developing it. I mean, obviously, Tequila Works. Rime. Video game. I said Cideo game, but Google fix it. Don't worry
and
about
they
it.
They know what's up.
Wikipedia.
Like, do you mean Trine? It's like, no. I mean
Rime. Publishers Gray Boot and 6 Foot, or Gray Box and 6 Foot, which I've never heard of. I think it comes down to what the publishers then need to do in terms of, like, if you're a publisher and you've negotiated to get spots on GameStop shelves, you already have X number of slots, why not give it to this platform and an up-and-coming thing, right? I don't think it's as easy as that in terms of, and not to mention that games do still sell well on shelves when people
see
them.
Yeah, well, exactly, and especially now on the Switch where it's like the answer of why Bomberman was there is because people wanted something else to buy that wasn't just Zelda. Mm-hmm. So they had that.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I think that this is not going to be a problem in the future.
For long.
For long. Yeah. Yeah, I think that once more Switches get into people's houses and the devs don't need to worry so much about this, like, this isn't going to affect AAA games. Like, they're not going to cost more, or even A games.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think it's going to affect third parties. I think it's going to affect indies.
Yeah.
So, and most indies are seen as downloadable titles anyway.
Well, and that's the whole thing is, like, if you're truly, and I'm not insulting anybody, if you're truly an indie, you might not be working with a publisher. You're doing it all on your own. So, yeah, you are digital only. So, you don't have to worry about this. This is where, like, limited run games comes in for Vita stuff or PlayStation stuff.
Yes, exactly. I imagine that will start happening a lot with the Switch as well.
Sure.
Ladies and gentlemen, this has been the Kind of Funny Games cast. Until next time, I love you.
Come watch me play Mass Effect this week.
Every Monday. Why do I keep saying every weekday? 9 a.m.
We say every Monday, and that's wrong. It's every weekday, yeah. It's 9 a.m. Till
you know
the
morning
show starts.
You know why I'm fucking it up?
Switch.
Is the alliteration. I was thinking Mass Effect Mondays, but you were saying Mass Effect Mornings.
Mass Effect Mornings.
So that got in my head. I was thinking the M's.
Man, I tell you what. Clown shoes around here.
Hope you enjoyed that video. If you like games content, make sure you click here to subscribe to Kind of Funny Games. And you like movies and comic books and food and other lifestyle stuff, you should click right here. Subscribe to Kind of Funny, our other channel. It's fantastic. And if you want to give us money, click here or here.